This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
رب العالمين اللهم صل على سيدنا رسول الله وآله وصحبه أجمعين. So I just want to clarify something in case it, for some reason there's lack of clarity on it. When you ask me questions after I explain what the matn says, I will answer you most of the time on the different opinions that exist in the madhahib. So I'll give you the easiest or the simplest of ways, or the way that it has the most ease in it. الأيسر. I won't answer you based on fiqh Shafi'i all the time, because that may be a bit closing the matter a bit. So don't confuse my answers or think that what I'm telling you is what the Shafi'iyya say. The Shafi'iyya say is what we're reading in the book. So the example being when we talked about masah al khuffain, wiping over leather socks, the Shafi'iyya do not see permissible to do masah, wiping on the socks that we're wearing right now. They don't see that, and the Jumhur don't either. It's only the Hanabila who accept that specific action. But when you ask me, I'll of course answer you based on what I see to be the aysar, or the most, the easiest of fatawa, the ones that will that helps you get through your life with the most ease. But what's in the matn is fiqh Shafi'i. I just want to make sure that that's clear. So just to kind of recap from what we talked about last time, when we said about masah al-khuffain, which wiping over the leather socks, or jawrabain, as the Hanabila see it, which is thick socks that are that don't have any holes in them. That for the muqeem it's 24 hours, and for someone who's doing safar, it is 3 days, right? So if you are doing safar, so you made wudu, full wudu, and then you put on your socks, or you put on your leather socks if you're Shafi'i. Then you get 3 days in a row, right, to wipe on those socks. Now let's say that you are no longer traveling. I mean, in the middle of it, like a day and a half in, you end up arriving home. You're not traveling anymore. Khalas, you can't do that anymore. You've already done a day, and you're not traveling anymore. So you have to take them off. And you have to make full wudu. The same thing would happen if you were if you started wiping over your socks, not traveling. You're still where you are. You're still in your location, and you started, and you start traveling. You don't start counting 3 days from then. No, you have to make a full wudu, and then put. So for you to do 3 days in a row, you have to make the full wudu during travel, and then wear the socks during travel, and then stay traveling for the 3 whole days in order for you to be able to do 3 days. Any change of those conditions will only give you the 24 hours. So if you end up arriving before the you're not traveling anymore, you arrive before the 3 days are done, or you make the full wudu and put the socks on before you start traveling, then you're only gonna get 24 hours each time. Is that clear? So the only condition that allows you to do 3 days in a row for the Shafi'iyya is that if you make the full wudu and put on the socks during travel, and then stay traveling for 3 days or more, right? And then you can do wiping over the slippers or the leather socks or the socks for 3 whole days, right? Now, another question that came up was, what happens if we take off our slippers? Now, when I answered that, I was answering it based on what I see to be the easiest of fatawa. But we're going to continue reading now in the matn, and we'll talk about the Shafi'iyya, how the Shafi'iyya see the specific action, because the Shafi'iyya don't accept that. So we're going to continue. Inshallah, just make sure that when you ask me a question, you understand that I'm answering you not based on fiqh Shafi'i only, right? What I explained to you from the text itself is fiqh Shafi'i. I may elaborate sometimes if there's different opinions, and I may not. But if you ask me a question, I probably will ask you based on what all the madhahib say, just because I want you to benefit from the answer. So you're not taking something that is restricted or limited to one school of thought. Rather, you're benefiting from the ease that is provided by understanding the different schools of thought. All right. So where we are now, what page would we leave?
23.
Wayabtul al-mashu. Okay, so do you guys know where we are? Does everyone know which part we are? It begins with wayabtulu al-mashu. So that's where we stopped off. Wayabtulu al-mashu bi thalathati ashya. And the act of wiping over the leather socks for the Shafi'iyya is invalidated or is no longer permissible if 3 things happen. So 3 things, if they happen, then you are no longer able to continue to wipe over your leather socks or slippers or just regular socks if you accept the Hanbali understanding of the issue. With 3 things. The first one, بِخَلْعِهِمَا, if you take them off. So for the Shafi'iyya, if you take them off, then you cannot put them back on again and continue to do masah. Right? You have to make a full wudu again if you take them off. And I'll talk about that in a second, because there's different opinions regarding that, and that's what I answered last time when you asked me. وَالْقِضَاءِ الْمُدَّةِ, and for the time to expire, meaning you go through the 24 hours if you are muqeem, if you're staying where you are, and the 3 days ending if you are musafir, if you are traveling, right? وَمَا يُوجِبُ الْغُسْلِ, and anything that will cause you to have a ghusl. So if you're like, well, what causes you to have a ghusl? You go back a few pages. So if you go back a few pages, and I like the fact that he does this, because he makes you kind of to revise things. So go back, and you'll find, وَمَا يُوجِبُ الْغُسْلِ, are a number of things, right? If you go back a couple of sittat ashya, there are six things that will cause you to need to have a ghusl. Three for men and women alike, and three for women on their own, right? All right. So what are the three things that will cause you to need ghusl for both men and women? This seemed to have okay. That's good enough. What are the three things?
Intercourse.
Yeah. So first one is intercourse, iltiqa al-khitanain, and then.
Third one's
so, yeah, so if you pass away, then you need someone has to do ghusl for you, and then orgasms or ejaculations, right? That will cause you to need to have ghusl. All right, good. So if any of these things happen, then you can no longer continue to do masah al khuffain. You can't continue to wipe over your or your slippers. The other two things is if you take them off for the Shafi'i, the moment you take them off, you have to make wudu all over again. Do you lose your fatahara if you take them off? Do you lose your tahara? No. So for the Shafi'i, you don't lose your tahara. For other schools of thought, they say that some of them say that you lose your tahara, meaning that you're no longer tahir. That means you have to make, meaning you cannot pray. So some schools of thought say if you take off the if you had made wudu by wiping, then you take them off. Right now you've lost your wudu. You have to make wudu again. And that's a certain certain schools of thought see that. The Shafi'i you don't, which makes it easier. So if you take it off, you still have your wudu, and that is, in my opinion, the asah al ara. So it's
yeah. Tahara is associated with wudu.
Yes, so pure.
What is associated with
ghusl
then?
So it's also tahara, but it's called raf al janaba. Raf al janaba is the removal of the major religious impurity. So janaba is major religious impurities, and then hadath is minor religious impurities. So hadath like gas or going to the bathroom, right? And then the three things that we talked about, like as an intercourse, is major religious impurity. So to remove the minor religious impurity, wudu is enough. To remove the major, you need ghusl, right? So taking off the socks for the Shafi'iyya and for most of them, it doesn't cause you to lose your wudu, but some of them see that that way. Now, there is an opinion that I tend to accept in this issue. Yes?
Do you have the English version?
No, so I don't have any more English versions of that. I didn't have any to begin with. I just had maybe two or three that I gave out, and they weren't mine. But the imam may have some. If he has some, we'll ask him to pass them out. But you need to either use the iTunes version of Musa Ferber's translation, or actually find the book itself. And you can buy it online. Yeah, so you can buy it online. It's not too expensive. I think it's $10, $15, $20 top. So I think it's a good idea if you want to, if you're finding it difficult to keep up with the translation that I'm doing, and you want to actually see the words in front of you, then that's a good idea. But if you keep up word for word, you should be able to translate, inshallah, what I'm saying, because I translate it word for word. It's not a very complex metin. It's pretty simple. The words are pretty simple. All right. So the opinion I wanted to explain to you was that if you take off your socks, so let's say you start at, let's say you make your wudu at 11 a.m. That's when you made your wudu and you put your socks on, right? You put your slippers on. So now you have 24 hours. So you have up until 11 a.m. the next day, right? To do masah. So you'll be able to pray dhuhr, asr, maghrib, isha, and fajr, right? If you're losing wudu every time. Now, if you at Fajr, you make wudu for Fajr, right, before 11, and then you, by wiping over your slippers or over your socks, and you pray, and then you stay awake until 2 o'clock p.m. day. So you wake up in the morning, you pray Fajr, and then you don't go to sleep. And you never do anything to lose your wudu, so you don't leak any gas or you don't go to the bathroom, right? Can you pray Dhuhr without making a new wudu?
Yes,
you can pray Dhuhr without making a new wudu because you still have wudu, right? What you can do is you cannot make another wudu by wiping over them. You have to, if you want to make a wudu again after 11 a.m., if you have the intention of making a wudu again after 11 a.m., you have to take them off. Does that make sense? Within this period, if you make wudu from 11 a.m. the first day, which is when you put on your socks, to 11 a.m. the next day, then you can just wipe. But after 11 a.m. the next day, khalas, you have to take them off. Now, the question is, what happens if in the middle of this time? So let's say you make wudu for asr, you pray asr, and then here you take them off. You have wudu. If you had wudu, because you wiped over your slippers. You prayed Asr and then you didn't lose your wudu, but you took off your socks, right? For the Shafi'iyya, now you cannot wipe over them again. You have to make a full wudu again, right? And that is the prominent position for most scholars. However, there is an opinion that I tend to see a bit give it a bit more light as far as I'm concerned, is that you can, if you put them on, you still have wudu, or you put on new ones, right, and you still have your wudu, then you're allowed to continue wiping till the end of the time. Right? Till the end of this time. So it doesn't start a new one. If you take them off and then put them on again, so you take off and then you put on again. So is this the beginning of a new 24? No, this is a part of the old 24. And I tend to see that opinion to be a bit more rational. Because let's say you took off your socks, you didn't lose your wudu at this point, you still have your wudu, right? And you wore them again, you wore them with tahara, right? But is this a new time? Is it a new cycle of 24 hours? No, it's still stuck with the earlier cycle. Now the Shafi'i don't accept that, as we just read in the matin. يُبْطِلُ الْمَسْحَ خَلْعُهُمَا. Whenever you take them off, then you cannot do masha. Again, you have to make a full wudu all over again. Does that make sense? Because I felt like that question came a lot last time, and I felt like there was some lack of clarity at the end of it for everyone. So that's just, I just wanted to make sure that was clear. Okay. فصل, now a new chapter. وَشَرَائِطُ التَّيَمُّمِ خَمْسَةُ أَشْيَاءَ. And there are five conditions for doing tayammum. Now, you know what tayammum is, generally speaking? Yeah, so tayammum means when you want to make wudu, but there's no water anywhere. Or you cannot use water. So the conditions to do something called tayammum, called dry ablution. So it's dry ablution, and we're going to use dust or sand or soil for it. I guess maybe those words, I guess dust is the best word for it. So there's five conditions for the Shafi'iyya in order for you to be able to perform tayammum. So the first one, وجود العذر بسفرٍ أو مرض. There has to be an excuse for you not to use water. So either you're on the road, you're traveling. You're like, what does traveling have to do? Well, if you're traveling, of course these are back in the day, and this is all the water you've got, and either you're going to drink it or make wudu with it, then what are you going to do? Obviously, you're going to drink it. You don't make wudu with it. Right, you do dry ablution because if this is all you've got. Now, if you have a lot of water and you're like, no, I'm good. I have enough water for wudu. I have enough water to drink. I'm good. And there's a lot of checkpoints along the way. We're totally fine. Then you don't do tayammum. Like today, if you have like a water bottle in your car, you can't say, well, I need to drink it because there's like a million checkpoints on the road. You can get down. There's a lot of water. Alhamdulillah. There's no more. I don't think there's a place on earth that has more water than Canada. So you're fine as far as finding water. But Alhamdulillah, living in the Middle East or in the Arab, Arabian Sahara, it's a different story. So if this is all you've got, then you're not going to use wudu for it. So safar, if you have an excuse of being on the road, traveling, marad, or you're sick. Let's say that if you put water on yourself, you die. Then what do? Yani, you cannot make wudu. So if water is going to touch you, it's going to cause you to...
How would water touch you?
Well, let's say that you have an open wound. Right? Let's say you have an open wound somewhere in your body, or you can't. So if that's the case, then you don't have to do wudu. Or let's say you have a skin disease, or yani there's any health circumstance that will cause you to be in harm's way by putting water on you. That makes sense. So if at any point water touching your body is going to cause you to be harmed, then you're allowed to make dry ablution. All right. So that's the first condition, right?
Not simple lethargy or feeling weakness.
No. It has to be like a harm's way. You're going to be ill if water touches you because you have like an open wound or you have some skin disease or something like that. Now, it's not very common, but it may be. Like someone could be, if you're in the hospital and you just suffered an accident and there's a lot of open wounds, to make wudu is going to actually cause them to get very infected and you're going to die, then you can do tayammum. That's not a problem, inshallah. So there has to be that excuse of either being sick or being on the road traveling with no water. Yes? No, we'll come to that in a second.
Is the other option that you would make a wudu and then you could put a bandage over it and then you would just wipe like wet hands over?
Sure, if that is not going to cause any harm. If the possibility of harm there is minimal. Meaning if water coming on the body or if the majority of the of your arm or of your head, like a major part of wudu is water can't come close to it, then you can just do dry ablution. But if it's a small cut, and then you can just cover it up if you know.
Minor, do you have to have the wudu before you put the bandage on?
So what we're going to do is we're going to that will fall under al-jaba'ir, which is casts. So when we come to casts, we'll talk about if you have a band-aid, because it'll be the same analogy, inshallah, for both. But generally speaking, you have to have an excuse. Either you are ill, or you are traveling and there's not enough water for you, then you can do dry ablution. And the second condition, وَدُخُولُ وَقْتِ الصَّلَةِ, and the time of prayer has to enter. What does that mean? So let's say it's 11 a.m., right? What do you pray at 11 a.m. today? Nothing, there's nothing to pray, right? Can you make dry ablution at 11 a.m.? No, because there's no prayer to pray. You're like, but I want to have wudu. No. You just wait until it's dhuhr time. Hopefully by then, either you find water, if you can't find water. And if not, then you make dry ablution. Dry ablution is not something you can do in advance. You do it as a necessity. You do it when the time is needed. So time for prayer, you look for water, you can't find any water, all right? Then you make tayammum. But you don't do it in advance, like an hour in advance. And then what happens if you make it in advance and then dhuhr adhan comes, but there's water, do you have wudu? No, you have to use the water, so it doesn't work anymore. No, yes?
What about 11 a.m., you want to talk to the fajr?
No, so why don't do that? So just wait for fajr, inshallah, and then don't do that. No, you can just wait because qada. So qada doesn't count here. So we're not talking about qada. Qada you can do any other time. So you can do it at dhuhr time, which is usually better. All right. وَدُخُولُ وَقْتِ الصَّلَاةِ, which is the enter of time, prayer time. وَطَلَبُ الْمَاءِ وَتَعْذُرُ اسْتِعْمَالِهِ وَإِعْوَازُهُ بَعْدَ الطَّلَبِ. So and for you to look for water, meaning that means you have to actually look for water. You have to try and seek out a water source. You have to find, so if you don't have any water and you're on the road and it's time for prayer, you seek a water source. If you don't find a water source, then that's the third condition you've just fulfilled. You have to look for water. You can't just say, well, there's no water, yeah, so I'm just going to pine on the ground and then move on. No, if you know that there's another couple of kilometers, there's going to be a place where you can find water. So you have to actually seek it out, because it's the asl, the origin, the base, the foundation, the principle is that you're going to use water for wudu. And you have to kind of exhaust all the resources available before you move on. وَتَعَذُّرُ اسْتِعْمَالِهِ, or the fact that you cannot use it. I mean, the water that exists, you cannot use for whatever reason. Whether because it's harmful, whether because it's not, it's contaminated, for example, or because you don't have enough of it. وَإِعْوَازُهُ بَعْدَ الطَّلَبِ, or if you find water, you find only small amounts of water. So these small amounts you're going to need for something else. Or these small amounts aren't enough to make wudu. So وَإِعْوَازُهُ بَعْدَ الطَّلَبِ. So these are the five conditions that you need in order for you to make tayammum. So you have to be either ill or on the road. I mean, there has to be an excuse. You need to have some. The time of prayer has to enter. It has to be time of prayer. You have to search for water, seek it out. It has to be water. If you find it, it has to be impossible for you to use, whether because it's contaminated or you're ill or there's not enough of it. Or there's very small amounts of water. You find a very small amount of water, which is not enough for you to make wudu. It's barely enough for you to drink. So if these conditions are fulfilled, then you can use do tayammum. To make it very simple, either you cannot use water, right, for any reason, or there is no water. Right? Either you cannot use it, either for whatever reason, whether you're sick or you're traveling, there's not enough of it, it's contaminated, and you look for it, you can't find it, regardless. Or there's no water at all. Right? So one of those two things, and the time of prayer, which is very important to me. You understand that. There has to be the time of salah. So you only make tayammum when you're going to pray immediately. You can't make tayammum and then say, okay, I'll pray in an hour. Because in an hour you may find water, and then you have to do it again. Right? So if it's time for salah, it's 1:28 dhuhr time, you look around, you look for water, you can't find water, or you cannot use water because you're ill. Yes?
Say for example you do tayammum on dhuhr.
Yeah.
And then before asr comes you find water, do you repeat tayammum?
No, so you don't repeat. You're not required to repeat salawat when you do tayammum. Right? But that means for asr you're going to have a full wudu. Right? But you don't have to repeat anything. Alright. وَالتُرَابُ الطَّاهِرُ لَهُ غُبَارُ, and pure dust or turab, is that what they is that the translation for turab in the book? Is it dust or is it sand? What is it?
Existence of pure earth containing.
So earth. Oh, so they said earth. Okay, that's fine. So basically, you're looking for something that has a dusty nature or characteristic to it. So we're talking about earth. So you go, if you're walking in a park and there's no grass and it's not damp, so the earth itself, there's dust. So if you hit on the earth, then some level of dust will come up. And that's what the tayammum is looking at, basically. But turab al-tahir, and pure earth or pure dust, lahu ghubar, has a certain level of dust. Certain amount of dust will come out of it. فَإِنْ خَالَطَهُ جِصٌّ أَوْ رَمْلٌ لَمْ يُجْزِ. So But if that, let's say that the earth or the sand or the dirt or the dust is not pure, meaning there is white sand in it, or there is what do they build with? They use
water.
Yeah, what is it called in English?
Or just like unnatural or manufactured materials, right? So for example, like bricks. Like we couldn't do tayammum on bricks if they were lying on the ground.
Yeah, so yeah, if you've seen when they're building houses, they have white type of sand, so you can't use that. And shul baton, what's yeah, cement. Yeah, so subhanallah. So dust, cement that is not, of course, is not a mold yet. So it's just the dust of cement. You can't use that either. So anything that is manufactured or anything that is not pure turab, you can't use for wudu. You can't go for tayammum. And if the sand itself, or the earth itself, or the dust itself, or the dirt itself is mixed with that, you can't use it. You need to look for turab tahir. You have to look for clean or pure earth, and then we'll talk about in a second what you need to do, right? And of course, there's a lot of details on these issues in the madhahib. I'm not going to go into a lot of it because it takes a lot of time, but you understand the idea. And inshallah, you won't be caught up in a place where there's nothing but there's no water, or if there's no water, there's no actual turab. I mean, that'd be very hard if you'd come to a place where there's no water and there's no sand, like there's no pure dirt. That would be very, I don't know where you would be, to be honest, if that's your situation. I'm pretty sure you have bigger things to worry about at that point. Yeah.
For the first one, wujud al-rab, is it only for safar and marad?
No, so that is like examples, like bi safar and marad. But there are different examples that exist regarding what you could end up needing. Yeah.
Just wondering, because in the Shafi'i madhhab, they usually emphasize that you actually have to touch the physical earth. So is there an issue with taking the dirt, putting it in a bowl, and putting it in your house? Is that an issue in the Shafi'i madhhab?
To put it in your bowl in your house? Why?
For example, let's say somebody is like chronically ill and they're going to be making tayammum.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's fine. Yeah, it's fine. If you read Al-Mughni, Al-Mughni Muhtaj Al-Sharbini, that's specified as something okay. Even though if there's no reason for it, then yustahab indahum, meaning it's recommended that you hit the ground, the actual earth itself. But you can move it from one place to the other, as long as it's tahir. As long as it's not being mixed with anything else.
It still has to be dirt. Like.
Yeah, it still has to be dirt. Yeah, and it can't be mixed with anything. It has to be pure. All right. وفرائضه أربعة أشياء. And what is obligatory when it comes to making tayammum are four things. We have four things. What's number one, as always?
Intention.
And niyyah, right? It's always going to be intention. If you don't know what you're doing, then you're not doing it. Right? You have to know what you're doing in order for it to count. So niyyah is number one. Number two, ومسح الوجه, wiping the face. واليدين مع المرفقين, and the arms or the hands up to the elbows, right? والترتيب, and doing that in that order, and doing it in the order. The ayah, of course, the dalil of this is قوله تعالى سبحانه وتعالى سورة المائدة ayah number 6, فتيمموا صعيدا طيبا, right? فامسحوا بوجوهكم وأيديكم منه. Right? And then wipe with your face and then your arms with it. So what the Shafi'iyya do is they find a piece, when we supposedly look for a little part of earth where there's dirt or sand or dust. And what you do is you hit down with your hand twice or three times, right? And then you wipe your face, and then you hit again, and you wipe your arm from elbow down and from elbow down. Now which one you start with, it doesn't matter. Some of them say you start with your right hand doing on your left. Some of them say you start with your left doing your right. The arjah is you start with the left and you do your right. So you hit three times, you wipe your face, you hit again. And that's how you do it when there's turab, when you find turab. This is of course in the case, the very rare case for us Canadians where you have no water anywhere, all right, and you cannot have water touching you for any reason. And then that's what you do, is tayammum. Like I said, if you're chronically ill and there's actually harm for you, like a burn in the burn unit. I remember in the burn unit, this was a big deal. We had to actually go a couple of times and talk about it, yeah.
For wiping the arms, does that include both sides of the arm or just one side?
So both sides of the arm. Yeah, so you go on both sides of the arm. Wallahu
a'lam.
No, the hands, no. So yadain is always from here to here. This is always, this is sunnah and wudu and sunnah and tayammum as well.
You go into the washroom, is your private parts exempt from that?
Yeah, so this is in the case that you just went to the washroom,
yeah.
And you couldn't find water after that to make wudu.
So they're exempt from that.
Yeah, so you just do down your face, your arms, and then you can pray. Right? And you can only do that when the prayer enters and you couldn't find water. Or you found water but it wasn't enough. Or you found water that was contaminated you couldn't use. Or you're ill and you can't use it. Or you only have enough for your travel. Right? Now, the moment and you find water for the prayer after that, then you were going to make that for the prayer after that. Yeah, you will, yes?
Emmanuel kind of asked it, but like, you have
sure.
to be specific enough to actually...
No. It lacks specificity when it comes to tayammum. So you're just wiping. You're wiping. That's all it is. So it's not ghusl. We're not washing anything. You're not, picking up sand and no. It's just the dust and it's a wipe. Right. That's all it is. Yeah. So you're wiping. That's it. There's nothing else. You start with the face, then go to the arms. Right. For the Shafi'iyya, tartib is fard. So if you mess up, just like wudu, if you mess up the tartib for Shafi'iyya, it doesn't count. Yeah.
I would have thought that you have to include the back of the hands because you haven't done the hands yet. So
it's qiyas ala al-wudu, right?
Yeah.
So is wudu, are the hands obligatory in wudu?
No.
No, for the Shafi'iyya, it's not, right? It's sunnah. So it's qiyas ala al-wudu, so the hands are sunnah for both. So it's the yadain, in the marfaqin fi khilaf, there's a difference of opinion regarding that. Even in the madhab itself, even in the Shafi'i madhab itself, whether the hands have to be included or not. So you can include them just for the safe, but the rajah is that you don't have to. All right, so those are the four fara'il, those are the four obligatory actions of wudu, of tayammum, of dry ablution. So you have to have the intention, it's wiping the face, it's wiping the arms to the elbows, and then you do it in that sequence for the Shafi'iyya. Now, sunanuhu thalathatu ashya, and there's three sunan for tayammum, for the Shafi'iyya. The first one is tasmiyah, the same thing, almost exactly as wudu, so you say bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim at the beginning. Wa taqdeemul yumna ala al-yusra, and then doing the right before the left, that's the sunnah. Wal muwala, and then doing it in consecutively, so not putting an amount of time or a period of time between one thing. So you don't imsah ala wajhak and then you go. So the sunnah, but of course, if you do, it still counts for the Shafi'iyya, just like the wudu counted. Now muwala is more of a big deal for the Malikiyya, and for them tayammum la yujza, it doesn't work unless you do muwala, meaning you do it consecutively. Right? For the Shafi'iyya, it's a sunnah. So altogether, you want to think about seven things for tayammum. You want to think of niyyah, of tasmiyah, of saying bismillah, of wiping your face, of wiping the arms, of doing right before left, doing it in that sequence and doing it consecutively. Four of them are fard, three of them are sunnah. Right? The four things that we talked about at the beginning is what is fard. Do it consecutively, in the sequence, meaning face before arms, and make sure you have niyyah at the beginning. And make sure, of course, the condition is that you have to have no water or it harms you, and you have to find turab that is tahir. Turab has to be pure. It cannot be mixed with anything else, with sand or any manufactured dust of any kind. All right. Any questions on that? That's pretty. It's pretty simple. Yeah.
You can't just hit dirt that's not dusty.
Sorry?
You can't just hit dirt that's not dusty.
Well, if you have no other choice, then as long as it's earth, you're good. But you're supposed to look for dusty earth. But let's say that it's been raining for the last 5 days straight. Or of course, if it's raining, then you make wudu. So that makes no sense. So that I lost that right away. So that was ruined right then and there, right?
But
yeah. So, but again, that would kind of kill the whole point. If it's not dusty, that means it's been raining. If it's been raining, then you should find water somewhere to make wudu. So I think that kind of kills it. But yeah, any pure soil should work, even if it lacks, it doesn't have much dust in it. Yeah.
So if you're in the desert, you can do it on the sand.
Yeah, of course. Well, that's pure earth, right? Sand, I mean, as manufactured white sand. Like, you ever seen the sand they build buildings with? That's what we're talking about. Not the actual, like, beach sand is fine. Like, if you're, of course, again, you're at the beach, so it doesn't work either. So, so I seem to be completely messing this up as I go along. My examples aren't.
How about when you're, like, at a playground with kids?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, again, these examples don't work because there's always water around, right? So, yeah.
No blood, nothing is permissible. You can't do on cloth or anything like that.
So the Shafi'iyya have difference of opinion on that. Other madhab are okay with anything that brings dust. So if you're sitting on a couch and the couch has dust, some of the madhab accept that. And there are certain opinions within the Shafi'i madhab that accept that as well. Specifically since there's dust in it. But that is a bit of a, it's a long argument. Like, there's a lot of debate regarding it. I don't want to get into too much of it. So the hadith, there are a number of hadith of the Prophet that describe how the Prophet ﷺ did it, but the Quran itself worded it word for word. So فَتَيَمَّمُوا يَا صَعِيدًا طَيِّبًا فَمْسَحُوا بِوُجُوهِكُمْ وَأَيْدِيكُمْ مِنْهُ. So the Quran was very, very clear on it. And he was observed, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, doing it a number of times. It's one of the it's one of the certain rukhas or the certain way because it's a Quranic one. So the Quran, the evidence is the Quran itself.
That's what you follow.
Yeah. So وَالَّذِي يُبْطِلُ التَّيَمُّمُ ثَلَاثَةُ أَشْيَاءٍ. And what causes tayammum to be invalid? Three things. Number one, مَا أَبْطَلَ الْوُضُوءُ. Whatever causes you to lose your wudu. So what causes you to lose your wudu? It's important that go back for a moment and find out and remind yourself, what is it that causes you to lose your wudu? There are six things that cause you to lose your wudu. You guys are all eating tamar. What are the things that cause you to lose wudu? Because what causes you to lose tayammum are three things. The first thing is everything that causes you to lose wudu. What causes you to lose wudu? Of course, if anything comes out of the two exits, anything coming out at all, right? Yeah, so sleeping, على غير هيئة المتمكن, if you're not sleeping in the proper upright way with your back supported and your bottom part supported, then that will cause you to lose your wudu. Loss of conscious, loss of mind, loss of sanity for any reason. Touching, for the Shafi'iyah, touching a non-mahram woman. مس فرج الآدمي بباطن الكف, with the inside of your hand touching your private parts, whether front or from behind, or the actual. And then of course we talked about details of how different madhahab see that a bit differently. But that's what the Shafi'iyah say. So any of these things happening will cause you to lose your tayammum, meaning you lose the religious purity that you have that was brought to you by tayammum. There's two more things that will cause you to lose your wudu for tayammum, or lose your tahara for tayammum. The other one, وَرُؤْيَةُ الْمَاءِ فِي غَيْرِ وَقْتِ الصَّلَاةِ. And then seeing water outside of your prayer, outside of prayer time. So, and this is an important mas'ala. So if you're standing up in prayer, you did takbir and you're praying, you just made tayammum a second ago. So you made tayammum because you looked for water, there was no water, and you're praying right now. So as you're praying, and of course this is for someone who can use water. Those who cannot use water, this doesn't apply to. But if you can, but you just can't find it. So you're praying, and then when you're praying, you actually see water somewhere, or water becomes available, or it starts to rain. Right, as you're praying your salah. So do you have to end your prayer? For the Shafi'iyah you don't. For others you do. Like it's a matter of, remember we talked about that in the istashab, right? So yustashabul aslu for the Shafi'iyah and the Hanafiyah. So you can continue. The asl is that you had wudu, you continue until the end of what you're doing. So if you see water outside of the time of prayer for the Shafi'iyah, you have to make wudu immediately. Even if it's not a time of prayer. Even if there's not a time of prayer, you have to make wudu. So let's say you made tayammum, you pray dhuhr, you're on your way, you see water, you make wudu. Why? Because you've just lost your tayammum. Right? Even if it's not a prayer time, you've just lost your tayammum. So you should make wudu in order for your tahara to be acceptable. Right? So the moment you see water outside of a prayer time, do you have purity still? If you made tayammum? No, you've lost your purity. It's like you just leaked gas from wudu. So the moment, so you made tayammum, you have religious purity, you have tahara. You pray, you see water, you lost your religious purity, you have to go make wudu. But if you see it during prayer time, yeah, during prayer time, then you can continue. You can continue your prayer till the end of it. Right? Other madhab say that you actually have to end your prayer, go make wudu, and then pray again.
That's the majority?
No, it's kind of half-half, actually. So Hanafi and Shafi'i say, like, you don't have to finish, and Hanabila and Maliki say you have to repeat it again. So it's just a matter of difference of opinion. But either way, the Shafi'i and the Hanafi are okay with you continuing your prayer till the end of it. And then of course, after prayer, right, you see water, right, because water is still there. And then what happens? You don't have purity anymore. So you have to make wudu. But you're allowed to continue your prayer, which is the point that we're saying. وَرُؤْيَةُ الْمَاءِ فِي غَيْرِ وَقْتِ الصَّلَاةِ وَالرِّدَّةِ. So apostasy, basically leaving Islam. So leaving Islam causes you to lose your religious purity, but that's a very, of course, general one because it kind of makes you lose everything, really, if you think about it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. If that were the case, why isn't that part of wudu?
They don't see ridda causing you to lose wudu.
You don't need wudu anymore.
Yeah, but so the example they give here, and this is a very, very specific, this is very specific stuff that I don't want to waste your time with too much, that if you were to make ridda with wudu and then regret that 5 minutes in or 10 minutes or an hour in before you actually do anything, come back, you still have your wudu. Right? So that's the mas'ala that they see here. But for the tayammum, the moment you make it, the moment you leave the Islam class, you've lost your wudu. So if you come back again, you say, well, I had tayammum before. No. Sorry, my brother Yani, you have to do it again. But these are specific examples and stuff, but this is what they see. This is how they view it.
So for tayammum, if you do lose it after finding the water,
and then you don't find that, like, it's gone somehow.
So, let me give you an example. So, I made tayammum because I didn't find water. I prayed Dhuhr. During Dhuhr prayer, I saw water. I continue my prayer. But the moment I finish my prayer, I no longer have my purity. So, I go and make wudu. And I say to myself, I'll make wudu with this water so that I can pray also later on. I go on the road, right? I didn't have a container to take the water with me, so I'm just going to hope that I find enough later. I lose my wudu on the way. I leak gas as I'm going. Asr prayer is now in. I look for water, I can't find it. So I make tayammum again, right? But the moment you see water, if you had made, you lose your tayammum, you lose the religious purity that you had that came from tayammum. You lose it immediately. So you have to make wudu. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, but what if you didn't make the water, the wudu in the water? For example, there's water, but then there was najasa in it.
Okay, that's a different thing. خلاص, but that's تعذر استعمال الماء. So that's the condition of not being able to use water for it to be contaminated, for example, right? So if water is, if you're standing in front of a bin of water that is najis, then you make tayammum. You're not going to, it doesn't make some sense, right? So that's تعذر استعماله, meaning you cannot use it because of kind of contamination or anything else that causes it not to be usable. Yeah.
Why is there apostasy and validator for?
It's too long of an argument. Wallahi, Shaykh, khalas, just leave it as is. That's like a tertiary book of fiqh study. That's very, it goes into a lot of detail, a lot of philosophy of Islamic, a lot of Islamic philosophy. And it's really not. I mean, how many times are you going to end up?
We don't have these problems.
How many times are you going to run through this problem where someone leaves Islam and then enters like an hour later and is asking you, and his question is, do I still have wudu because he doesn't want to make it? Come on, Shaykh, this is like no, just leave this alone. But anyways, these are things that you learn when you kind of go into more depth. The fiqh to understand the philosophy behind thought, right? But it's going to take too long, inshallah. So we could just keep on going. وصاحب الجبائر يمسح عليها. And the person, yes.
So for example, Asr comes.
Yeah.
But you don't find water.
Yeah.
But you know that before Maghrib comes, you're going to be at a place where there is water.
Yeah, you can continue. You can continue, or you can make tayammum and pray.
Okay.
So it's up to you because the you don't really know if you're going to find water. You assume.
Well, what if you actually know?
How do you know? Do you know ghaib? You don't know. Do you know you're going to live that long?
Like, for example, you're outside the city.
Yeah.
Right? But you know it's going to take you an hour to get to the city.
Yeah.
So do you think tayammum there and then just pray? And then
if you decide to pray right then and there, then yeah. If that's your decision. Like, if you want to pray at awwal waqt. But you don't have to, right? You can pray as long as you can push prayer until the end of its waqt. The Hanafiya only see yani prayer being wajib at the end of the waqt anyway. So that doesn't a difference. It's a long difference of opinion. So if you decide to pray because it's the daqal al waqt, it's the time of prayer, and you want to pray right now, right, and there's no water, then you can do tayammum. Now the fact that you think or you know or you have a reason to believe there's going to be water later, اختلف أهل العلم. There's a difference of opinion whether you should continue with that and then pray at the end. At the end of the time. So if it's Maghrib, let's say it's Asr time. So you pray just before Maghrib when you've exhausted every resource for looking for water. But if you have no reason to believe there's going to be water at all, so you can pray at the beginning. So it's pretty much up to you. But again, tayammum, how many people here have actually done tayammum before? Where have you done tayammum?
I guess I was at a park and it was actually the bathroom was locked and I had no other choice for that.
Yeah.
I was with the kids.
Yeah.
Not my kids.
Yeah.
And I had like the doors. You know how the bathrooms are locked.
Yeah, yeah.
I could not open it at all.
Sure.
So I'm like, all right, what do I do?
Good.
No, it was. If I showed where it is, where we used to live, it's like.
Yeah. So yeah, it's not as easy, but yeah, your question is valid, and that's what you would do. You could decide to pray right now, look for water, not find it. But again, if you know water is going to be there somewhere down the road, then that means you still that's looking for it basically, right? Looking for water, seeking out water. That's one of the conditions. So if you know, okay, if it's just a couple of kilometers this way, there's water, then you continue to sight it. But if you don't have any reason to believe there's water coming up, right? Then and the waqt may go out, then you should do tayammum and pray. All right. وصاحب الجبائر يمسح عليه. And the person who has casts. So let's say you break your arm or.
Sure. But the men's was locked. I made the ammo, and then I prayed, and then I'm like, well, let me see the woman's, and the woman's was open, and then I made wudu after. But I didn't check the woman's because I'm like, yo, I just want to clarify that.
Even if it was open, would you got it?
If it was open,
you would have got it.
Yeah, because it's like what else? I was like, yo, I have to make wudu. Like now, I'm like, is that
no, I agree. I second the brother's concern here, Yani. I wouldn't go in, Yani.
No, hello, anybody there?
Are you less a weirdo going in if you said hello at the beginning? It's not gonna make a difference, Yani. If you get caught, you're gonna be in trouble. So no,
what
maybe.
That person in there?
Oh my God.
Yeah, so this is fiqh, right? Going into all the what if and what if, right? All right. So if you have a cast, if you've broken your arm or broken any body part or your leg, right? So if you want you to make wudu. And the example here, we're going to use arm because that's the most common. So what do you do? فَيَمْسَحُ صَاحِبُ الْجَبَائِرِ عَلَيْهَا. Then you wipe over the jabira. And you can either wipe over the whole thing or you can wipe over the one part of it if it's difficult for you to move it around. So let's say that your arm has to stay like this. You can't really, so it's hard for you to wipe. So you can just wipe on top. The rajih are the most, the prominent opinion is that you wipe all over the casts when you're wiping. وَيَتَيَمَّمْ وَيُصَلِّي وَلَا إِعَادَةَ عَلَيْهِ إِنْ كَانَ وَضَعَهَا عَلَىٰ طُهُرٍ. So if you have a cast, then when you make tayammum, you can just wipe over it, and the same thing goes for wudu as well. So when we talk about wudu, it's the same condition here, it's the same situation. So if you have a cast on your arm, when you make wudu, you can wipe over it. And when you make tayammum, the same thing, you can just wipe over it. And then you pray. Now the Shafi'iyya have a condition. قَالْ وَلَا إِعَادَةَ عَلَيْهِ إِنْ كَانَ وَضَعَهَا عَلَىٰ طُهْرٍ. And he doesn't have to repeat this prayer if he had worn the cast with tahara, meaning if he had made wudu before. So it's like the example of putting on the leather slippers or leather socks. You can wipe over them if you had wudu before you put them on, correct? Right, so the Shafi'iyya draw an analogy. They say when it comes to casts, you can wipe over the cast if you also put the cast on when you had wudu. Right? And if you didn't, then you will make tayammum or make wudu, wipe over it, pray, and then when you take it off, you have to repeat your prayers. That's what the Shafi'iyya. That is very, very difficult. The other madhahib have different opinions on this matter, which I find to be much more...
So repeat all the prayers you missed.
Yeah, so the Shafi'iyya, if you had worn it without wudu, then you should repeat it. And that's one of the aqwal for the Shafi'iyya, meaning not all the Shafi'iyya say that. This is what the Imam Abu Shuja' al-Asfahani rahimahullah put in his book, and at the time that was a prominent position. And Imam al-Nawawi has a different opinion on that later on, and there's different opinions within the madhab itself, meaning you don't have to, even if you didn't have tuhur, because most of the time you don't. Most of the time, you break your arm, you're in panic, you're in pain, you don't know if you had wudu or not, and you probably didn't. So when you put it on, you really can't do much about it. So and the jumhur don't require you to have wudu before you put your cast on in order for you to wipe over it and not need to repeat it. So the Shafi'i say you can pray, you can do wiping, whether it's wudu or tayammum, and pray, but when you take it off, you have to repeat these prayers and do proper wudu because you didn't wear it properly to begin with. But that's only the Shafi'i who see it that way. Yeah?
I'm just going back, I was going to ask, let's say you put the water over your sock, but then you take your socks off, you still have your wudu or
nothing? So Shafi'iyya, Shafi'iyya say the moment you take it off, you still have your wudu, but you can't wipe on them again. Alright, so you can't wipe on them. If you put them back on, you can't wipe them, but you still have your wudu.
Right.
It's only certain scholars who the minority of madhahib actually see for you to lose your wudu, and the ra'i is marjuh, is not prominent. Yes.
So the majority believe that you have to still have your original wudu without breaking it to keep putting the socks back on if you want to keep putting them on. And then you said that there's another opinion. I was just curious, is it from one of the madhahib specifically or just one?
No. No, so it's more mutaakhirin. It's more like late scholars, like within the last 50 years or so. So it's not a part of a madhab. There's a lot of opinions that surface in the last maybe 40, 50 years from the scholars of the different madhab, but they're not actually a part of the madhab itself. They haven't become a part of the madhab. They probably will in another 10, maybe 10 years when these scholars' books are written, and then this will be incorporated into the madhab. But I will tell you, again, when I give you opinions like this, is just to give you the easiest of opinions that have evidence and that have some merit to them to make it easier, inshallah. But the madhab themselves don't see permissible for you to take them off, put them back on again with wudu, and then keep on doing masah. I just gave you this example. I just gave you this as an alternative or something that scholars have spoken of that has some merit to it, because you're just within the original 24 hours to begin with. Yeah. Does that make sense?
It definitely makes sense, because you still have the tahara.
You still have tahara, yeah.
There's
nothing
explicit to prove that you have to have the original wudu.
Exactly.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so this is why I think it has merit, this argument anyway. All right. So, that's regarding masih al jaba'ir, and the same thing would go for band-aids. So when we talk about casts, we're saying the same thing about band-aids. So if you have a band-aid or if you have a patch on it, then you can do masih on it as long as it doesn't harm it, right? If it harms it, then you can either make wudu around it Or you can do tayammum, and there's a difference of opinions among scholars regarding that. Meaning, if there's a part of your arm that is has a patch on it, and if water coming near it may be very harmful to it, can cause it to be affected, then either you can make wudu around it, right? Some scholars say, or you can actually do tayammum. So you're allowed to do tayammum in specific situations like that. So casts or patches or band-aids, specifically when water is going to be harmful to your body. Okay. وَيَتَيَمَّمُ لِكُلِّ فَرِيضَةٍ. You have to make tayammum for every faridah. So you made tayammum for dhuhr. Dhuhr time entered, you make tayammum, you prayed. You continued on your road, and asr time came, and you still haven't found water. Can you pray right away? No, you have to make tayammum again. So tayammum is like a temporary fix. It only works for one prayer. It works for one prayer at a time. That's all it works for. So it doesn't. You can't make tayammum in fajr and then pray five, six prayers with that one tayammum. No, every time you're going to pray a farida, meaning one of the five prayers, you have to make a new tayammum. وَيُصَلِّي بِتَيَمُّمٍ وَاحِدٍ مَا شَاءَ مِنَ النَّوَافِلِ. But as far as nawafil go, you can pray as many nawafil as you want with one tayammum. Right? So let's say you pray dhuhr, you made tayammum, you pray dhuhr. Now you want to pray sunnah to dhuhr. Do you have to make tayammum again? No. You can pray as many as you want with nawafil, sunnah, with the same tayammum. But when asr time comes, you have to make another tayammum. Now here's a question. So let's say, because you're traveling, right? You're going to do jam' and qasr. So you want to pray dhuhr and asr. Do you have to make a tayammum for dhuhr and tayammum for asr? So no, you don't. You make tayammum one for both prayers at the same time, right? When you're traveling. So you're traveling, you're doing jam' and qasr, you put dhuhr and asr at the same time. So do you make tayammum for dhuhr and tayammum for asr? No, you can do them both at the same time. That's an acceptable opinion in Shafi'i. And there is an opinion in the Shafi'i madhhab that says, no, you have to make tayammum twice. Tayammum for dhuhr, because this is what they say. They say, you're going to pray them two rak'ah each at the same time, right after each other. So you make tayammum, you pray dhuhr, now you're supposed to look for water again. You're supposed to try it one more time before you do asr. That's what some of them say. So you look again for water and then take tayammum and pray. But in the Shafi'i, except especially when you're doing safar, to pray the prayers that are allocated in the same slot together, like dhuhr and asr or maghrib and isha, to do it with one tayammum. Yes, who had a question? Yeah. Did I answer your question? Okay, all right. Yes.
Is the tayammum only for prayer
purpose? Yes, only for prayer purpose. Yeah, nothing else. Yes.
What if someone dies and you don't have any water to?
Well, that's a different story, of course. If you don't have any water, then khalas, you clean them up the best you can and you bury them. Well, that's sad, of course.
You need to make ghusl.
Well, if you can't make ghusl, if there's no water, how do you do ghusl for them?
Exactly. That's what I mean. How do you make you need to make ghusl, for example, right? How do you make ghusl if there's a water around?
So you do tayammum. Tayammum works for both.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, you have no choice. What are you supposed to do? You're not going to have a ghusl with dust or anything. You just do tayammum, right? Just stick to tayammum. I don't want to see someone standing there, pouring dust over his head. No. So this is regardless whether you don't have wudu or you don't have ghusl. Now, the thing is, when you see water, if you don't have ghusl, now you're not going to do wudu. You're going to do ghusl. Right? Let's say you need to have ghusl, but there's no water at all. So you make tayammum when you pray, right? And then what do you do if you see water? You make ghusl. Now, do you repeat the prayers that you prayed?
No.
Yeah, the Shafi'i say you do. Yeah, the Shafi'i say you do, all right? So if you had janaba, right, and you didn't find water to make ghusl, and you're going to do tayammum, then you do tayammum, you pray, and then when you find water, you do ghusl, and then you repeat what you lost. And other madhab have different opinions on that.
What's the point to pray first time?
Because it's time for prayer. So, yeah, but there's a difference between you not praying at all, I mean the timing being dhuhr right now, and you just sit around with no prayer, and you pray with something that is invalidating it, but because you have no choice right now but to do it, you do it, and then you do qada later on to repeat it properly. So there is stuff like that in ibadat, in acts of worship and rituals, there are stuff like that, where sometimes you have to do it, but with the understanding that you may have to do this again, or you're going to do it again.
And that's the prominent one is Shafi'i.
Yeah, this is the Shafi'i. But there are other opinions that don't require you to do it again. Now, those who don't require you to do it again, they have a condition that is when you lost your religious when you had janaba, you didn't have water at the time, right? If you didn't and you just chose not to have ghusl and now you're on the road and you're going to make tayammum, no, then you have to do it again. So let's say you woke up in the morning and you had janaba, or you prayed fajr, you went to sleep, you woke up at 11 o'clock, you had janaba, right? And there was water in the house but you didn't do ghusl. You go on the road, dhuhr time comes in and there's no water anywhere. What do you do? You do tayammum, but now you have to repeat because you could have done, you could have fixed this. Like this is your mess. You made this mess. You have to, you know, pay for it. So those who do accept you not repeating after ghusl are those who say that you had no choice. Meaning you lost, you were on the road and you lost your, and you woke up with janaba and there was no water. Then those are the ones who accept it, but they still see the prominence is still you repeat it.
So in that case, would you, if you're with your wife, are you encouraged not to have intercourse with your wife if there's no water then?
Around there.
To say encouraged or discouraged is a bit, it's a bit of a stretch. Yeah, so probably if you know that you're not going to be able to do ghusl, then it's wise that you don't do that.
But is there ithm if you do it?
No, there's not going to be ithm. Yeah, so ithm doesn't exist. None of this has ithm in it. Like none, doing tayammum, even though you need ghusl, there's no ithm. There's no you're not going to be punished for any of it. But it's smart, I guess, from a point of view of just knowing what you're doing that you shouldn't maybe if you know that there's no water available for ghusl. But you're not ithm. Like you're not going to be punished. The only time you're going to be punished for there's ithm or sin for intercourse is when it's done either during siyam or during ihram or something like that. But besides that, you're not at ithm. That makes sense? Like there's difference to say, because when we say the word sinful, yani, we're saying that you're going to say yad for this. That's a big deal. It takes a lot of guts for you to say something is ithm if there's not enough evidence to support it. But it is definitely not smart. Like we can say that, but ithm, I don't believe there's going to be ithm for it. Wallahu ta'ala alam. All right.
So
yes.
There's only a few scholars that actually allow it, even if the prayer time has already expired completely, they would still say you have to make it up. Like, as I'm thinking that.
Oh, you make it up maybe even days later.
Oh, it does not be right away.
Oh no, even days later. Let's say I today, all day, no water, I had janaba and I'm doing tayammum. I prayed five prayers. The next day I get home, I find water. I make ghusl and then I have to repeat the five prayers that I did during that time. I mean, that's prominent for the Shafi'i. But there are those who say that you don't have to repeat it.
Proper to do it that way?
Well, there's really no example of him, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, that happening to him. Yeah. Like, that didn't happen to him, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, specifically. So all this is based on analogies that are drawn from different examples, yeah.
Do you repeat your prayers once you find water, or just once you have time?
So then we'll talk about that when we talk about qada. So when we come to prayers, and we talk about the concept of repeating a prayer, qada, or doing it outside of its, or i'ada, sorry, it's not qada. Qada is when you didn't do it at all. When we talk about i'ada, so when we're going to come to talk about, when we talk about salah, rituals, we'll talk about three things. We'll talk about ada, doing it on time properly. Qada, when you don't do it on time at all, you don't do it, so you miss the time. And then i'ada, meaning you did it, but now you have to do it again, right? So there are certain rules and conditions that apply to them. We'll talk about it when we come to that. So we're talking about not qada, sorry. We're talking about i'ada. So that you've already prayed it, then you have to do it one more time. So you have to repeat it again, yes. All right, so we continue, inshallah. Faslun, on the chapter after that. وَكُلُّ مَائِعٍ خَرَجَ مِنَ السَّبِيلَيْنِ نَجِسْ إِلَّا الْمَنِيِّ. Everything that comes out of the exits of the human being's body is najis, is impure. Except mani, except sperm. It's not seen as najis. Now, when it comes out, you need to have ghusl after it, correct? Wudu is not going to cut it. You have to have ghusl. And for most of the Shafi'i, you have to have ghusl and wudu. For most of the Shafi'i, some of them are okay with just one of them. But the actual substance itself is not najis. So urine, however, and feces are. They are najis. So if they touch, if they're on your clothing, then you have to actually clean your clothing with water and get them completely out or change your clothing. You don't lose your wudu, but you have to if you have feces or urine on it. But if you have sperm on your clothing for whatever reason, and we do have an example of that where Aisha radiallahu anha said, "Kana tafruku al-maniyya min libasi Rasulillah," that she would just scratch it off. And you just get it. So it's not najis. Meaning, if it was najis, we would have to use water. You have to bring like a bucket of water and actually clean it off, clean out the mani. So sperm is not najis in its nature. It is, however, you should remove it, just like you remove any other substance from your body when you want to pray. But it is not seen as najis. All right, and that is from, by the way, that's from all animals as well. Meaning, all animals have the same ruling regarding this. For the Shafi'i, except everything. For the Shafi'i, every time you say animals, you say for all animals except the dog and the pig. So Shafi'i say dog and pig immediately. And so do Hanabila. Hanafiya have less difficult rules against dogs, and Malikiya don't say dogs at all. So Malikiyah for them is just the pig, it's not the dog. So they don't see any najasa with the dog. And Hanafiyah have less different regulations. Shafi'i and Hanabila will say animals and then accept. And you'll see this as we go throughout the Matin, is always going to be the exception of the boar and the dog or the canine. All right. وغسل جميع الأبوال والأرواث واجب. And washing with water, urine and feces from clothing or places of prayer or places of worship or even from households or any place that you exist in is wajib, it's obligatory. It's wajib upon us if you're living in a house and there is urine anywhere or feces anywhere, that you wash it out with water. It's not just the removal of it. You have to actually bring water and soap and wash it out. Water is enough from an Islamic perspective, even if you don't have soap. Even though we use it because it brings more cleanliness into the equation. But for Islamic purposes or Islamic religious purposes, water is enough. But you have to wash it out with water. Whether it's on your clothing, whether it's on the carpet, or whether it's any part of your house, you're supposed to wash it out because you're not allowed to leave najasa anywhere. It's wajib to wash with water anything in your vicinity that has najasa, impurities on it. As the example here, abwal, which is urine, and arwath, which is feces. It's wajib. It's obligatory everywhere. And they give evidence of that. The Prophet ﷺ, when the Arabi came and he urinated in the masjid, that he told them to pour water on it until it was cleaned away. So that's the example. But of course, it's much bigger than that. Impurities are supposed to be purified and regardless of where they are. إلا بول الصبي الذي لم يأكل الطعام, except the urine of a infant boy who has not yet eaten food, meaning he's still just breastfeeding. Right? Because there's evidence in the Imam Bukhari Muslim that the Prophet ﷺ was carrying once an infant, maybe a two-month-old boy, and he urinated and it came a bit of on his clothing. So he just قال فإنه يطهر برش الماء عليه, then the purification can happen with just maybe sprinkling some water on it. So he just kind of with a bit of water on his hand just kind of pushed it away or dusted it off or brushed it off. He didn't actually take water and pour it on the part that the najasa came on it and cleaned it. Now, when I say boy, because the madhahib do see, because the evidence that we have is about a boy, they don't have it about a girl. So they didn't make the analogy. Now, why they didn't make an analogy, I am not sure. It's a matter of difference of opinion within scholars. It's not clear as why when they talk about the female that you should wash it off. There is a hadith that exists that refers to that. Hadith is Hassan, meaning its authenticity is kind of 50-50. That the Prophet ﷺ said, "The bawl al-sabiy الذي لم يأكل الطعام, the urine of a boy who has not yet eaten food, then فانضحوه بالماء, meaning just brush it off with some water. وبول الجارية التي لم تأكل الطعام فأهريق عليه الماء. And as for the infant girl, then wash it off with water. And we don't really know exactly why, and we don't have much evidence to support either way. Some madhahib, like Hanafi and Malikiyah, for them, it's still urine. They don't see the difference between whether it's a boy or a girl, or whether he has eaten food or not eaten food. It all needs to be washed off with water. And the Shafi'i and the Hanabila have the exception for an infant boy who has not yet eaten food and is still being breastfed, that you can just brush it off with some water. And this is a simple, the difference is pretty simple. To be on the safe side, whenever urine comes on clothing, just wash it off with water, and that way your child, you're safe. Yes?
Sorry, kind of related. I don't know if it got covered in part of losing the wudu, but when you touch another person's private,
yeah, so you lose your wudu.
Oh,
yeah. For the Shafi'i, of course, yeah.
My wife asked me the same question. What about washing the baby? And if the pee while she's praying and washing them, would it affect the wudu?
Sure. So when it comes to infants that have not yet eaten food, then you don't lose your wudu yet.
But for the Shafi'i.
So if they're older, then she has to repeat her wudu.
If they pee and...
No, so when you have pee on you, you don't lose wudu.
Yeah.
You just have to wash it off. But if you touch a private part of, then that's the reason for wudu for the Shafi'iyya. Right? For children, there's a different, the madhahib have different opinions on this, especially the Malikiyya, when it comes to touching children's private parts from mothers. So there is a permissibility for them not to need to repeat their wudu, rather just wash off their hands.
And for adults, for us, after taking bath, when we dry up the whole body, including the private parts, then.
So this is a different thing. So this is where the Shafi'iyya rulings regarding touching your private parts with your hands will cause you to lose wudu. So when you dry up, you shouldn't be, for the Shafi'iyya, you shouldn't be touching it with your hands. You should be using the towels or paper towels. But the Hanafiya don't have a problem either way. That's why if you take by the Hanafi, then you don't. It's not a problem when you're touching yours or you're touching your kids. You're good. Your wudu is still there. But if there's bowl, then you need to. Or if there's urine, you have to wash it off. Yeah. The same thing. You just wash it off. So you just wash it off. Again, memorize what causes you to lose wudu. So you don't keep on asking the same question, right? Memorize. These are the things that cause you to lose wudu. Nothing else causes you to lose wudu. There's only three things that two things that make you need to have ghusl. Nothing else. Everything else is just the substance that is on you. You need to wash off. That's all you need to do. Just make sure you can make that, yani. All right, so we'll just read one more question before we stand up. وَلَا يُعْفَى عَنْ شَيْءٍ مِنَ النَّجَاسَاتِ إِلَّا الْيَسِيرَ مِنَ الدَّمِ وَالْقَيْحِ تمام؟ وما لا نفس له سائله اذا وقع في الاناء ومات فيه فانه لا ينجسه. So what does this mean? So when it comes, and we'll talk about this in detail inshallah next time, when it comes to are there any amounts of najasa that are small enough for us to say yu'fa? Yu'fa means that it's forgiven. You don't have to get rid of it. You don't have to wash it off. ولا يعفى, say it's, and no amount of najasa is forgiven, الا اليسير من الدم والقيح, except a small amount of blood and pus. This is for the Shafi'iyya. وَمَا لَا نَفْسَ لَهُ سَائِلَةٌ, and maybe the death of an insect. لَا نَفْسَ لَهُ سَائِلَةٌ is talking about insects or creatures that don't have blood, running blood in them. So like flies and crickets and cockroaches and stuff like that. إِذَا وَقَعَ فِي الْإِنَاءِ وَمَاتَ فِيهِ فَإِنَّهُ لَا يُنَجِّسُهُ. Let's say that a bug died and fell into a cup of water. Right, it's in the water now. It's dead. Now a dead creature is najis, right? But because this is an insect, it's not najis, and for it to fall in the water, it doesn't cause the water to become najis. So you can take out the cockroach or the. Of course, it's disgusting for you, but you can drink. Like this is not, this water is still not najis. You can do wudu with it if this is the water you're going to use for your wudu. That makes sense, because the actual insect is not najis when it dies, because it doesn't have any blood in it. It doesn't have running blood, or the amount of blood that it's in it is very small. It is small enough to say that even if that amount of blood was on your clothing, yu'afa anhu, meaning it would be forgiven. So let's say you're praying, and we'll talk about that next time inshallah, a bit more detail, because there's a lot of different opinions and it's important for you to know. If you're praying and after you finish your prayer, you look and you find that there's a dot of blood on your clothing, right? So for if it's smaller than dirham baghli, which is basically, or dinar as the Hanafiya said, so if it's smaller than this amount, then you're good. Then your prayer was valid. If it's bigger, then you need to repeat it, inshallah. You have to repeat it again, right? And this is dam and qayh. What about bowl and buraz? What about urine and feces? Well, this is where there's a lot of difference of opinion. And even within the madhhab al-Shafi'i itself, there's a difference of opinion. So Imam Nawawi had a couple of opinions, and others had different opinions regarding whether, if it's small amounts of urine or feces, will this be forgiven and you can continue your prayer? Why is this important? Well, many people go to the bathroom, and then maybe a drop of urine may continue, correct? Like this is a problem that is kind of widespread. So let's say a drop of urine is there in the so if it's small enough, and how big it is, and whether it can be seen or it can be smelled or it can be, so there's a lot of different issues. So inshallah, next time when we start, that'll be what I'll explain to you, and you'll have clarity on that. So in case this is a problem that you face often, then you know exactly what to do, inshallah. Inshallah, tomorrow before Maghrib, so at 7:15 inshallah, the halaqah for Arabic, inshallah.